Hello, my name is Noor Houghton, and I am the Course and Materials Design Module Tutor on the MSc in TESOL program at Aston University. Course and Materials Design Module is actually in two parts, as its name suggests, Course Design and Materials Design. And in this particular recording, I would like to focus on the first part, the Course and Syllabus Design of the module. Let us first look at the contents of the whole module. As you will see from the slide, there are 12 units altogether. The first 6 units will be focusing mainly on course and syllabus design, with Unit 1 focusing on an introduction to course and syllabus design, the second unit focusing on syllabus types, what different types of syllabus there are, and how they link with second language acquisition. The third unit focuses on process syllabuses, procedural syllabuses, and task-based syllabuses. Unit 4 focuses on lexical approaches to syllabus design. Unit 5 looks at needs analysis and how we move from needs analysis to syllabus as corpus. And Unit 6 looks at setting objectives and evaluation procedures in course design, course and syllabus design. The remaining part of the CMD module, Course and Materials Design module, looks at materials and approaches to materials analysis and discovers or explores rather issues like authenticity and using natural language in materials design. And Unit 10, as its name suggests, moves from course design to materials design. But the focus of this particular recording will be on course and syllabus design, and will therefore cover areas in the first 6 units of the module itself. Okay, so what does the first part of the module aim? So the aims of the first part, the course and syllabus design, CSD element of the module, has several aims, obviously. The first aim being offering experience of a variety of approaches to syllabus and course design. Another one is to clarify key concepts and principles and rationale behind language syllabus design. Another aim is to help you to appraise, evaluate, and adapt existing syllabuses and courses. And then it gives also the chance to research and gives you the chance to research and design your own courses. And it also helps you to research the language of the target discourse community and use this to draw up a course syllabus for any group of learners. The learning outcomes of the Course and Materials Design module, CSD element, Course and Syllabus Design element, can be summarized as follows. We would expect you to show an ability to recognize the types of syllabus used for a particular course and to assess its strengths and weaknesses for a specific group of learners. We'd also expect you to be able to make principled adaptations to an existing course or syllabus and also be able to justify these in the light of the relevant theoretical issues. You would also be expected to show the ability to design your own courses based on your own research and to advise on materials and methodological approaches for these courses. You would need to show the ability to describe a course in different ways to suit particular audiences. And you would need to be able to advise on the use of technology if this was relevant to the syllabus design or the course design that you were focusing on. I would now like to look at some key terms in the area of syllabus, course and syllabus design. Now, one of the things that you would need to consider when you work within the realms of course and syllabus design is to decide what your understanding of certain terms are. For example, the word syllabus, what does it mean to you? We have different definitions. For example, White defines a syllabus as the specification and ordering of content of a course or courses. So keywords being here, the specification and ordering of content. Robinson says, syllabus design is based essentially on a decision about the units of classroom activity and the sequence in which they are to be performed. So we're looking at here units of classroom activity and the sequence of these activities, the sequence in which these activities are to be performed. And Breen defines syllabus as a plan of what is to be achieved through teaching and learning. So when you decide which of these you would like to use for the purposes of your work within the module or within course and syllabus design itself, you can then adopt the definition and use it for your own purposes. And similarly, we have another term that is important to define, the word course. A course, according to Hutchinson and Waters, is an integrated series of teaching learning experiences whose ultimate aim is to lead the learners to a particular state of knowledge. So a course could also be seen as a series of lessons, so that's sort of using the term course quite loosely. But you might like to use a tighter definition and use Hutchinson and Waters' definition. We also have the word curriculum. Curriculum refers to the totality of content to be taught and aims to be realized within one school or educational system. And this is a definition that White used in 1988. Markey uses curriculum as such, curriculum subsumes a syllabus. So a syllabus is, if you like, a much smaller aspect of a wider setting. So the curriculum subsumes a syllabus. And Graves defines curriculum as the philosophy, purposes, design, and implementation of a whole program. So if you're working in the realms of syllabus design, make sure you have decided how you want to define the word syllabus. And you will also find that together with syllabuses, you will be looking at words or terminology such as goals and objectives and needs. And when we talk about needs, we also find that there are different ways of describing needs. We have perceived needs, felt needs. So make sure that you're aware of the different terminology that exists and that you have defined these in the way that they work for you, obviously using relevant background literature. When we talk about syllabus design, we also need to be aware of the sequencing decisions in a syllabus, what choices we have in terms of the sequences. If you remember, we looked at the definition that Robinson uses for syllabus design. And Robinson says syllabus design is based essentially on a decision about the units of classroom activity and the sequence in which they are to be performed. So thinking of the sequence in which the different classroom activities are to be performed, we have different choices. We can see that some syllabuses are actually prospective and fixed. The sequences in the syllabus are prospective and fixed. In some syllabuses, they are much more online. That is, they happen during classroom activity, such as Breen's process syllabus. And they could also be much more retrospective in their approach to the sequencing of a syllabus, such as Candlin's syllabuses. In syllabuses, we would look at two different, if you like, overarching types of syllabuses, one being called synthetic syllabuses. And synthetic syllabuses, what characterizes synthetic syllabuses is that in such syllabuses, the content is pre-selected. Now, this is really important in that the content has already been decided and it is being used as part of the learning activity. So the content is pre-selected. The teaching is thus incremental, and learners' task is to resynthesize the language that has been broken down into a large number of small pieces with the aim of making this learning task easier. Analytic syllabuses, on the other hand, are syllabuses where learning is organized in terms of social purposes. And in such syllabuses, learners interact with and analyze samples of language relevant to their needs. And learners in such syllabuses, learners' analytic capacities are used. So to summarize, a synthetic language teaching strategy is one in which the different parts of language are taught separately and step by step, so that acquisition is a process of gradual accumulation of parts until the whole structure of language has been built up. Whereas in analytical syllabuses, the starting point could be content defined in terms of situations, topics, or themes. And language is not linguistically graded. Well, we've been looking at synthetic syllabuses and analytic syllabuses. Now let's look at some examples of the types of syllabus that could be categorized under synthetic or analytic. Synthetic syllabuses, we have many different examples, from structural, grammatical, to situational, to functional, notional, communicative syllabuses, lexical syllabuses, lexical syllabus designed by Dave Willis, skills-based syllabus, Johnson's skills-based syllabus. So all of these are examples of synthetic syllabuses. In terms of examples for analytic syllabuses, we have mainly three that we can list. One of them is task-based, another one is process syllabuses, and the other one is procedural syllabuses. This one here, procedural syllabuses, is one that Prabhu introduced, and it's as part of his Bangalore project. Now, all of these are classified as analytic syllabuses, but it's worth mentioning that task-based sometimes features under synthetic syllabuses, whereas if you read Long and Crook's article written in 1992, the categorization they put forward is that task-based fits under analytic syllabuses. So you might want to read that to see for yourself whether you agree that it is much more of an analytic syllabus or a synthetic syllabus. And also I should state at this point that in the module materials, you would be able to get much more information about each of these different syllabus types, what they mean, examples, and so forth. And if you wanted to get much more information on, especially, for example, analytic syllabuses, and with process and procedural syllabuses, for example, I would recommend David Noonan's book called Syllabus Design. It's an Oxford University Press book. It has very useful information about the differences between those two types of syllabuses. At this point in time, I would like you to ponder over your own experiences. What type of syllabus or syllabuses have you been using in your own teaching contexts? For example, have they been much more synthetic, do you think, or were they much more analytic? And what makes them synthetic, or what makes them analytic? Same goes for your own experiences as a language learner, of a second language, for example. Have you been in a context where the syllabus was much more in synthetic approaches, or have the syllabuses been much more analytic in their own approaches to the way languages were taught? Okay, and now we're going to move on to course design. What do we mean by course design? What does it involve? Think about being a course designer. Where would you begin as a course designer? Would you assess the needs of your learners first? Would you articulate your beliefs in terms of language teaching, language learning? Would you formulate your goals and objectives for the course that you are going to deliver? Would you develop your materials? Would you design an assessment plan for the course itself? Would you define the context at the start? Or would you organize the course first before you move on to anything else? Or would you conceptualize the content before you move on to the next step. So if you were to take all these points into consideration, all of these points being items that one would need to consider in terms of course design, where do you think one should begin as a course designer? If you want to spend a few minutes on this to decide where you would start and how you would proceed as a course designer. Okay, so I would encourage you to have your own list in front of you as to in what order you would attempt designing a course, or in what order you have in the past attempted to design a course or have done course design. Before you look at the next slide, please. There is no right or wrong answer, because there is no hierarchy in the processes, and hence there is no sequence in their accomplishment. And one could consider that articulating beliefs and defining the context serve as the foundation for the other processes, but the processes themselves are not in a particular order that they have to be followed, because it is not a linear process, it's a cyclical process. I like this quote from Clark, 1987, cited in Graves. Course development, designing a course and teaching it, comprises a system the way a forest or the human body is a system. Components are interrelated. So you might want to think about how this works in terms of any course design that you might have done or are thinking of doing. And course design is a system in the sense that planning one component will contribute to others. Changes to one component will influence all the others. I think this goes without saying, this quote from Graves is so very true, in the sense that if we actually plan one aspect, one component of course design, it's likely to be making an impact on the rest of the course design. So one component contributing to the rest of the components, and changes to one of the components will influence all the others. So, if we can summarize what we've just looked at, organizing a course involves overlapping processes. It involves determining the organizing principles, any themes, genres, tasks, and it involves identifying the course units based on the organizing principles, and the sequencing of the units, and the determination of the unit content, and the organization of the unit content. When you study the Course and Materials Design module, you will come across the name Kathleen Graves quite a lot of times, because Kathleen Graves has written quite a lot in this particular area, especially in the area of course design. Now, she has a very well-written chapter in a very recently published edited collection, one edited by Anne Burns and Jack Richards. The book is called The Cambridge Guide to Second Language Teacher Education. I've got the full details in the next slide in a minute, but what I wanted to do was to show you how Graves represents the framework for curriculum planning. Now, it says curriculum planning here, but in the sense that curriculum is used here, the same principles apply to course planning and course design. So let's for a moment assume that curriculum and course are used interchangeably. This is not to say they are the same, but the very many principles that apply to curriculum planning apply to course planning as well. And this is a nice diagram summarizing the principles and the processes involved. So before we look at the framework, I wanted to say that this framework is for planning a curriculum or planning a course for second language teacher education programs. But everything that is said here applies to language teacher education, or sorry, language education itself as well. So we're going to look at the different categories here and apply it to language learning and language teaching. So in this diagram, we've got A, B, C, D, and E. If we can all look at A first, so this is the starting perspective. This is where we need to gather information about the learners who will experience the curriculum or the course itself. So A is the starting point. We need to understand what the learners know, who they are, what they know, and how, you know how to do something, and their expectations and all the rest. The ending perspective is B in this particular figure, so it's the determining goals, you know, what the learners should know. In this case, it says what teachers, but the same applies to learners, as I say, what learners need to should know and be able to do by the end of that particular course. So A is the starting perspective, and B is the ending perspective. And the ending perspective gathers information about what the learners should be able to do by the end of the experience that they will have had on the course. So B itself is like the goals of the program or goals for the program. The program itself, which is identified in D, in box D, is the bridge, if you like, between A and B. So between what the learners know when they enter a program and what they should know by the time they've completed it. And D has two components. The first is what they will be taught, what the learners will be taught. And the second one is how the learners will be taught. And we also have box E, where box E represents planning ways to evaluate how effectively D achieves B. In other words, how effectively what the learners will be taught and how they will be taught have been achieved, and how we can see that these have been achieved. Okay, and B, don't forget, was the ending perspective, what the learners should know and what they should be able to do by the end of the course. So E represents the planning ways to evaluate how effectively the design of the program achieves the goals that were determined. The framework came from Graves, 2009, in the edited collection of Burns and Richards, and here's the full reference. I would also encourage you to check J. Roberts, 1998, the book called Language Teacher Education. Although this book is about language teacher education itself, the course design checklist that J. Roberts introduces in those particular pages, 249 to 252, are very much valid for language course planning as well. J. Roberts talks about or gives a list, a checklist of what kind of items we would need to take into consideration. And these items are things like final course program, the planning schedule, the briefing of speakers and the group leaders, accommodation in the sense of, you know, both residential, whether it's going to be a residential course, for example, and also accommodation of the equipment, like audiovisual and other equipment, catering, planning exhibitions, if there are any exhibitions or or such materials. And selection of participants, the selection criteria, that is, dispatch of course information, how the people are, how the prospective candidates will find out about the particular course that you are designing. The course material itself, any last minute preparations and any follow-up, things like issuing certificates of attendance and analyzing and reporting on evaluation of the course. So you might want to check this out and look at the checklist provided in J. Roberts, 1998. Yes, so we've now come to the assessment of the module. How is this particular module assessed? Now, as it is the course of materials design module, and as it is in two parts, as I mentioned before, the course and syllabus design aspect of it and the materials development and evaluation aspect of it, you can choose one or the other or combine both if you feel that you can do this in a matter of 4,500 words. But let's focus on the first one, because I have been looking at course and syllabus design in this particular lecture. And if we think about course design and syllabus design and how the module will be assessed if you were writing an assignment on this particular topic, one thing that you would need to make sure before you venture into your assignment writing is to read the assignment guidelines that have been provided in the materials, the course materials. Now, when you actually look at those guidelines, you will see that they have been written in such a way that there are different guidelines for a course and syllabus design assignment and separate guidelines for a materials design and evaluation assignment. If you choose the course design or syllabus design focused assignment, you must make sure that you cover areas which include goals and objectives of your program and the needs assessment procedures and the implementation and evaluation, so both the implementation of what you are proposing and also the evaluation of how successful you believe what you have introduced or proposed has been. And the type of syllabus that was involved. So you need to show an awareness of the type of syllabus that had been used. If you remember earlier on in the lecture, I talked about the learning outcomes of the module. The same learning outcomes apply to the assignment, because for your assignment, you would be required to show an ability to recognize the types of syllabus used for a particular course. And you need to assess its strengths and weaknesses for your learners. You need to show that you have made principled adaptations to your course, existing course, or to the proposed course, or a syllabus strand. And you would need to justify these adaptations in the light of the relevant theoretical issues. You would need to show that you have designed your own courses based on your own research, and you would need to advise materials and methodological approaches for these courses as and when appropriate. Now, this particular issue here, you would not necessarily need to do it if the focus of your assignment was purely on course and syllabus design. But if you wanted to bring in elements of materials design into your assignment, then you would need to consider that when you design your own courses, that you're advising on the materials linked with the course design that you have proposed. So this third item here is very much a bridge between the two elements, the course design and the materials design. And not everybody necessarily ventures into this particular area, joining the two elements together. But you are very welcome to, if you wish to, bring both elements together. And finally, you would, as someone who would be writing, if you wish to write on course design procedures and course design in your assignment, you would need to show an ability to describe your course in different ways to suit particular audiences and you would need to show an ability to advise on the use of technology, if technology is actually something that can be used as part of your course. I hope you enjoy the module, and please do get in touch if you have any specific queries about the module, and do consult the course materials, where you will find a lot of guidance in terms of assignment writing procedures and also background reading, and anything you are not sure about, please do get in touch with me. Bye for now.